Welcome to the Voices of Homelessness podcast. I'm your host, Donald Whitehead, and today we bring you the voices of people who have experience with the issue of homelessness. Often we hear about homelessness through sound bites and stereotypes, but today we want to bring you the authentic voice of people experiencing homelessness. Homelessness is not about people who don't want to get to the other side. It's not about people who are lazy or all of those stereotypes that you hear, that it's just mentally ill people or that it's people with substance abuse issues. None of that is true. It's a very diverse group of people. And some of those issues are in place in the homeless population, but they're not the root cause. The root cause of homelessness is the lack of affordable housing and poverty. And here, we will explain to you through the voices of people who have actually overcome this issue, how they got there, what happened, and where they are today. And I am so excited to have the two people that are on our panel today speak to you, because they are people that epitomize getting to the other side, getting through, and then coming back to help others. So I want you to join me in welcoming two fantastic guests. We have Ashley, and Ashley's going to pronounce her last name because I will butcher it. And then we have Pastor Michelle Bush. So thank you both for joining us today. We really appreciate your willingness and courage to share your stories. And we are hoping to bring awareness to the rest of America about this issue in a real way that gets to the real issues. So we're going to start with you, Ashley. And please, Ashley, pronounce your last name. So what we'd like to hear is about your story. Okay. What happened? How did you get to the point where you experienced homelessness?
Okay. Thank you, Donald. My name's Ashley Klepek. I started experiencing homelessness maybe around the age of 14. I got pregnant after my freshman year, and I stayed with my son's dad, and together we were homeless in California. We hopped from house to house. I dropped out of school for a year. And I experienced domestic violence in that time as well. It was not until I turned 18 that I was able to come out of homelessness, where then I joined the Army.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing. We'll talk a little bit more about what it's like for you today, because I think you have an amazing story. And I want people to hear about the possibilities, what we can do if we persevere, if we use our resilience to get to the other side. So Pastor Bush, would love to hear you give us a little bit on your story.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Donald, for having me. Good afternoon, evening, good night to whoever or whenever you hear this podcast. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. my first experience with homelessness began as a child. I am the oldest of six children. We grew up in the inner city of Washington, D.C., a city pretty much plagued by many of the social ills affecting society today: alcoholism, drugs, gun violence. And we were, we first ended up homeless living in my mom's van, which was, for a child at that time, it was really, really difficult to play with our friends and then later have to like have dinner in the van and things like that. And I'll never forget this one time. My mom's boyfriend, who was just a lovely man, he treated us like his own children. He wasn't creepy, you know, you end up in those situations, but he was trying to get us to, he was trying to keep normalcy, you know, in our lives. And was like, well, you guys got to come in to have dinner. And I'll never forget just being defiant about not going in the van. You know, I'm out here with my friends. It was so embarrassing. So that was my first experience of homelessness. I had vowed as an adult never to have to be in a situation where we'd have to resort to living in a van. It was cold. It was terrifying for a child to not know where their next meal was coming from and things of that nature. So it really made impact on me growing up. But I coincidentally, like Ashley, I became a single mom at age 15, a teen mom. And, you know, through the course of doing things my own way, as they would say, I ended up sort of in a similar situation with domestic violence and having to make a decision that was best for my children. That's my first story of homelessness.
Well, thank you very much. I guess there is a thread in your stories. You both were parents during your experiences. Would love to talk about that part, and we'll get to that a little later. But the first thing I wanted to ask as a question is, so what was it that got you through that situation? What took you to the next level? How did you escape from homelessness? What were like the most important things that were in place that helped you get through homelessness? And either one of you can answer that question.
Sure. So it was always deeply ingrained in us and our faith. You know, my grandmother raised us in the church, and we were pretty much, you know, outside of church being just the place where they had this emotional experience, it was really the place where we felt grounded, where we found strength sort of to overcome the obstacles in our lives. And I would say that it was a combination of determination or self-determination, and also leaning to my faith. There in life, you know, in our life, because it was so unpredictable as a child going through that, we didn't have any control over, you know, what would happen next. So it was important to me to lean into the faith that was deposited in us early. And, you know, hence, you know, where I gained the strength to overcome those areas in my life that led to homelessness.
And faith is so critical. And I think it is probably in the middle are one of the most essential parts of people being able to deal with the trauma of homelessness. Now, were there any programs, or did you go to a shelter, or did you have some case management? Were there any specific programs that helped?
Sure. Along the way, I could go on for days, but from the van, of course, we ended up in like a transitional housing situation. And my mother was able to get a Section 8 certificate. I think that's what it was called at that time. I believe it's called Housing Choice Voucher now. But she was able to get a Section 8 voucher for her 6 children. So she was able to house, we were able to be housed. You know, through that program. And of course, I mean, it just depends on what period we're speaking of with our lives. With my life, I developed a program that would help individuals with life skills and job skills to get, you know, off of the unemployment roster and begin, you know, working. But that's later on in life. But just as far as programming, she was able to get some assistance through the housing programs.
So Ashley, how about yourself? What kind of interventions helped you? Were there particular programs, people? Where did you get your help?
So I didn't actually have any programs. Kind of what happened for me after I dropped out of high school and coming back, it was mostly teachers that were my support system, honestly, that really believed in me and believed that I had a lot of potential. And while I was experiencing my homelessness with my son, I was in and out of my relationship with my domestic abuse partner. And it wasn't until, I want to say, he beat me so bad, I ended up in the hospital, that when the police came and tried to intervene or made I take a police report, that they took me into the foster system and they took my son away and took my rights away as well. That I had a realization that this is not the life that I want and this is not the life that I need and that I wanted better and I was going to do something about it. And I didn't know what I was going to do or how I was going to do it, but if the opportunity came, I was going to take it. And after I aged out of the foster system and I turned 18 and I fought the court system to get my son back and get full custody of him, I was able to stay with family. And from there, I went and joined the military. And then from there, that was the end of my homelessness. And I never turned around and looked back.
Well, thank you. And the foster care system is one that we hear often. Almost all of the people have had some system interaction through their homelessness. Now, with your experience in the foster care system, was there any kind of independent living help that you got as you were transitioning? Or was it like, this is the end of your foster care, you're emancipated, and you're on your own from here?
Well, I wasn't emancipated. I waited until I turned 18. I was only there maybe a year in the foster home with my foster mom. And she was wonderful. She wasn't abusive. And, you know, I got along with all of the other kids and teens. And I felt a sense of compassion and my life drastically changed. At least my perspective on life did. You know, I was part of the least of us and I grew comfort in that and I grew compassion and I grew just so much love for these people that I knew the system didn't provide any assistance, honestly. Like once I was aged out, they told me I had to leave and I had to figure it out from there. And, you know, while I was a teen, I learned to navigate the bus system in California and was pretty much on my own doing, just getting by the best I could. But no, there was no additional assistance. And I had to learn how to apply for welfare. I had to learn to apply for food stamps. I had to learn to pretty much become an adult at a very young age. And I had to figure it out all on my own because I didn't have the help or support nor the knowledge to figure it out. And it was extremely stressful. And I feel like it put a lot of pressure on me to try to figure out what I was going to do with my life.
Same, Donald. My siblings and I, as a result of my mother's drug addiction, ended up in foster care. And it was six kids. I will applaud their efforts in trying to keep our family together when they did place us. They tried to, because we were very close-knit, they placed us two together. But like Ashley mentioned, I was the eldest of all of those, of all of my siblings. I was 13, I believe it was, when it happened. And so we were placed in a group home, my sister and I. And it was like we went from being little kids to adults instantly. But they did, the group home that we were placed at, they taught us a lot of life skills and they gave us sort of, you know, the beginning things. But I was so, you know, determined to have the family that I didn't have, thus, you know, turning to my own, you know, leaned to my own wisdom and became pregnant at 15. So, I mean, I literally had to grow up like this, you know. But yeah, there the programs, and I think it varies by state probably, you know. DC is a bit more, they're more hands-on and they're more about putting the families back together.
But what about at the end though, Michelle? Did they give you any resources at the end of your foster care experience that would provide you the opportunity or some sort of direction on leaving that system?
For me, I think it's a little different because I was determined. And so a lot of...
I understand. I'm going to stop you for a second because I understand your determination.
What I'm trying to get to here
is the system itself. What did the system provide?
I was going to say I was emancipated. So I went against the system because I wanted to be. That's what I'm saying. That's the difference. They tried hard to keep us in the system because they thought that it would, if we followed the program, that we would, you know, we would have better success. I was coincidentally put into a maternity home, which had the tools, but this was not the government. It was a program that was privately funded.
Right. I wanted to just get to the fact that often in the foster care system, and I'm not blaming the system. What I'm saying is that the system has to do a better job of preparing people for independent living. And it doesn't sound like in either one of your experiences, whether it had to do with your own determination or not, that system did not prepare you in an adequate way for kind of the next stage in life. But let's go back to something I heard in both of your stories. Family was very important. And really, like, one of the keys to people who have been able to have some challenges in life and, you know, stay out of homelessness is that safety net. Having, you know, someone in your family who could take you in. That's the difference. That's why, you know, substance abuse itself is not a reason for people to be homeless. It can be a contributor, but there's a lot of homeless people. I say this all the time, that sit in boards, addicts that sit in boardrooms, but they have safety nets. They have somebody to pick them up. So tell us about your relationship. So it sounds like during your homeless period, there wasn't as much of a relationship with family, but how is that today? Has that gotten better for you? Do you still have good family relations or has the family never come back together?
Okay. In our case, our faith community is sort of the glue or the connecting mechanism by which we, nurture our relationships. And I can honestly say through it all, our family has figured out a way to, despite all of the things that would drive us apart, find a way to stay together and stay connected through our faith. And it's been pretty much that has helped us to stay connected and close together. So,
and Ashley, how about you and your family?
So my family and I, we fell out of touch while I experienced homelessness. My mom was very angry with me when I became pregnant and she wanted me to get an abortion. And the rest of the family did not like who my son's father was, which I do not blame them, but I was in love and nobody was going to tell me otherwise. So I was going to do what I was going to do. And unfortunately, that made me cut ties with a lot of my family members. My family relationship is much more better now. But during those years, it was really hard because I really didn't have anybody to turn to. And the only way that they would welcome me back in was if I completely rejected him, cut him off. And, you know, then my son didn't have a father anymore. And I was a single mom. I was scared and I didn't know what to do. And I think that played a lot into it because I was resistant as well to the rest of my family because they weren't accepting of my situation. But my relationship with my family has definitely gotten better over the years. There's definitely still some sore wounds that are there. But overall, I think we've overcome those things.
And both of your stories are kind of a message to families that we have to allow our children to make mistakes, and we have to support them in that decision-making process. Your decision shouldn't be a recipe for you becoming a part of the homeless population. That shouldn't be like the verdict for any decision that you make isn't consistent with the values. So we got to stick by them. Sometimes in the midst of people going through things, our children, we push them away when we really should be pulling them closer, is what I hear. Now we've talked about your experience, and I want to move to the next phase. What's happening now? Because both of you have amazing stories, and they're not atypical stories. They're stories that are different, because most people go through this thing called homelessness and they get through it. They get to the other side and they don't want to have anything else to do with the word homelessness, the homeless service sector, none of that. But both of you have chose differently. Both of you, tell me what you're doing now. And kind of some of the steps along the way.
I don't want to. As I mentioned to you when we first had this discussion about coming on, I could have taken from either parts of my story, because I personally feel like I've lived nine lives already with many of the different experiences I've had over the years, experiencing homelessness as a child and then sort of having my own experience. I think, again, I have to give credit to my faith and just sticking to it. You know, I got involved in the church at an early age, about 16 years old. I had my first church experience. And even though nothing could have prepared me for what my life would ultimately become. But I think that it was the foundation that was laid there that influenced me to want to do more in my community and be able to utilize my experiences in a way that would not just say, hey, this is my story, this is how I overcame, but I actually rolled up my sleeves and became a part of the process where there were where things went lacking for me. Along the way, I decided to take control of it and then not just, you know, put it on paper, but actually get some results. And I think that was actually when we met, Donald, years ago, when I was beginning the process of starting the Live It program, where I authored a curriculum by which people could get and retain jobs. And we actually had hard to employ people come through cycles of that program and have great success. And just through my work with Live It and along the way, just in the community, being an evangelist and just working in the community, the Lord called me to a higher position, and that's how I became a pastor. And I'm doing that through my work. I'm being able to, you know, touch families and touch lives in very tangible ways. So, you know, it's almost a nod or a thank you to my story that, you know, this is how it ended up. So, I'm grateful.
I can imagine you use the empathy that you've gained from your own personal experience. That is probably a very, very valuable tool when you encounter people who may be going through struggles themselves.
Absolutely. Even in corporate settings, I was privileged to bring myself up through the ranks in my career. Underskilled, didn't have the education. I went back to school. I did those things. I did what I was supposed to do and then made my mark in my career. But even doing that, you know, having some grace for others, you know, it definitely is a part of that.
And I'm going to argue that your education may not have come at the traditional university, but the education and expertise that you gained through going through the experience is just as valuable as any education about this issue that you'll get in any university, Harvard on down. So Ashley, not diminishing education, because I know that's a big part of your story. So why don't you tell us about what your transition from homelessness to thank you for your service, by the way, I didn't say that, and where you're at today in your journey.
Okay. It was not an easy journey. It was very long, drawn out, hard, and very hard. I think once after I joined the military, I didn't realize that I was suffering from a lot of internal trauma that I had not dealt with. And that surfaced while I was in the military as well. And that also resulted from some sexual trauma that happened to me while I was in there as well. But after I got out of the military, it took quite a few years for me to really dive deep within myself to try to forgive myself for the things that I allowed to happen to me, and to be gracious with myself, knowing that I tried my best, and I worked my hardest, and this is where I was at. And it was just a lot of self-work more than anything on my journey to where I am now. And I think that was the biggest contributor to my success as to where I am now.
Now, where you are now is that you're working in a nonprofit.
Yes, I work for Haven House Services with Barbara Anderson.
Okay, and what do you do there?
So I do case management and wraparound services, and we also do advocacy.
And you also...
And transportation and donations and about a million other things.
You're also working on your master's degree as well, right?
Yes, I am. I'm working on my master's in social work.
So you have to tell the whole story because we want people to know like how far we can go once we have gotten through this issue. We want people to know about the extreme possibilities. So, you know, please don't be shy about sharing the amazing stuff that you're doing.
Okay. Yeah. Getting into school was not easy. Right after I got out of the military, I had two more children. So I have a total of three children. And I was remarried. And my husband, while he was deployed and everything like that, I was a stay-at-home mom. And it was much harder being a stay-at-home mom than it was actually being in the military. And
wow.
Yeah, it's like 10 times harder. It was so much easier just being in the military compared to being a stay-at-home mom. But for me, it wasn't until I tried to do some online classes while they were small because I couldn't afford to put them in daycare. And if I was going to work, I didn't have a college degree. So if I was going to work, I was going to get paid minimum wage. And so it was either work and all my wages go towards daycare or stay at home and try to get some online schooling with my GI Bill, which I tried and I failed numerous times, so many times that I failed my classes and I wanted to give up. And there were periods in between over the years where I would stop and start and stop and start my education. It wasn't until all three of my kids were able to get into school without me having to pay for daycare that I was able to go back full time. And it actually, during those years as well, I had to fight the VA for disability benefits for my PTSD as well. And that was a struggle because that was like a 2-year process trying to get that to help me sustain myself and my family. So that way I could get an education, you know, and cover the cost of putting them in daycare. But I didn't fully go back until, again, they were all in school. And once they were, I felt a sense of relief. I finally felt like, I know that sounds bad, but I finally felt like I got a part of me back. I just blossomed when I started Spalding University. And I was enchanted, I guess, by all the education and like the compassion and kindness. And I finally felt like I found my tribe. I found, you know, people who shared the same compassion and empathy as me. I felt like I finally found where I was meant to be. Like I finally found my purpose, something that at least would fit me So, but I graduated, I went 2 straight years, and I was the only one in my class to get honors. And I also got 2 awards. I can't remember the names of those awards off the top of my head, but I got 2 awards.
Congratulations, cum laude.
Yeah, cum laude. And then that was in 2020, and I took a year off, and I'm starting just now. I just started classes like a few weeks ago. So I'm excited and I'm nervous because I've never juggled a job and school at the same time. So
you actually met me in the class.
Yes, and I met my boss, Barbara Anderson, while she was speaking at class, and she was just so passionate about what she did, and she was just telling me like she don't care what other people think about her, and that, you know, she's there to do the job, and I was so inspired, and I was like, I want to be you. So I came on board with her, and I've been with her ever since, and now we're a team.
So I've known Barbara for about 20 years, and you do want to be like her. I can guarantee you that. And I can see that you're already starting down that path. So I don't think you should be nervous at all. In my short time knowing you, I think you'll rise up to the challenge without any issues whatsoever. So I encourage you to just stay the course and continue to do the great work that you're doing. Both of you talked about, you know, one of the things that people don't fully understand, I think people don't understand the challenges of being a parent and going through the homeless system. So I want to get to kind of the next phase of what we try to do on the show. It's not just about talking about the issues, it's about moving into solutions. So what I'd love to hear from you guys is, what could the system do better? Where did the system fail you? And if you were designing a system, what other things would you put in place so that the people that come behind you that have some of those same issues that you've described, how would you help them get through it? I think, so the reason I asked this is that the system is weird in a way. So if we were building a house this was the first time we were doing a construction project, we would probably ask the other construction workers how to do the work. So we wouldn't just start out there. But nobody seems to take that into consideration when they do homeless work. So they never ask the people affected, how do we build this house? How do we get people through homelessness? They take it upon themselves to know the answers. And that's why our system is so flawed right now. So I'm asking you today, this is your chance to give some direction. So what would you do different? What would you add or take away from the system as you know it?
First of all, I also echo Donald's sentiments to you, Ashley. I'm very proud to hear your story and to see how you overcome. I think highlighting stories such as these, Donald, are a great way to kind of get the word out that it's possible for us to have a chance at a productive life or living on the other side of homelessness. I think what we're doing at NCH is also very important. We're involving persons with lived experience in the process of designing programs, or at least giving their expertise or their input, so to speak, on boards. They're advising on housing policies, which I find to be awe-inspiring. As a person with lived experience myself, who picked myself up from my bootstraps and did what was necessary, it's important that even though there are those that still don't, they don't have the capability, but they have a voice by giving them an opportunity to speak on issues, to write about it. I would certainly encourage more persons with lived experience to write about and interview concerning their experience, so that there is actually a tangible piece of evidence, you know, that goes into play, or if something you said on Congress influenced a bill change, you know, how that, you know, how we elevate that voice, or, you know, celebrate it rather. I think that that's important. I think it's important that the decision makers are also at the same tables with persons with lived experience in such a way that it's a part of their initial onboarding experience, so to speak. You're going to work with a group of persons who have had lived experience. You should be a part of this focus group and make that as a part of their onboarding experience. That would be one recommendation.
Okay, Ashley, how about you? Do you have some recommendations that you think would be helpful to kind of change the direction that we're going down the road of right now? We're in a period of unabated homelessness, and we need some solutions. And the people who have been putting them together have not had a serious impact in the last 40 years. So we would love to hear your advice about what we can do.
Yeah. So from me experiencing my homelessness in the time of my teenage years, I'm going to speak on that portion of it. For me, it was extremely difficult to get on welfare, to get on food stamps, because I didn't have my family support and I was a minor. I also couldn't get a job and I couldn't support my child. So I was kind of forced to be on welfare, and, you know, I had to forge signatures, you know, my mom's signatures, so I could get services. And it was really difficult. And when those bridges are burned and you don't have family or access to family members, especially as a teenager and experiencing homelessness, like, it's so limited to what you can do that you're kind of stuck in that cycle. And you're kind of forced into programs. And if they catch you, like they caught me, you know, as a teenager or underage living in homelessness, then you get dragged into the foster care system. For me, I kind of fell into the cracks. So I was a domestic violence victim, and I was a minor as well. So when the police found me, they didn't know, they tried to take me to a domestic violence shelter, but I couldn't go because I was under the age. And my parents didn't want me. They called my parents. They didn't want to come and get me. They didn't care. So the police didn't know what else to do but to call a social worker. And then they took me and my son into foster care. So I just, for me personally, when it comes to living the experience as a teenager, I think it's very difficult to, you're forced to become an adult, but you don't have all of the ability and you don't have, the authority to live as an adult on your own. And I think that was the most difficult thing. And I think that hinders our ability to progress out of homelessness and take the charge that we want to change our lives and to make better. Like, we have to wait until we're 18. And then, you know, we have all these services when we're underage, supposedly. And then when we turn 18, like when you get out of the foster care, there are no additional services after you turn 18. So then you're kind of left on your own, you know, when you're trying to better your life as a teenager in that homelessness, and try to get programs and people to help, but you can't do that because you're a minor, you know, and they won't help you. And so I felt like that was my biggest fall through the cracks when it came to my homelessness experience that I would like to see changed.
Thank you. Another connector in both of your stories is that you have been in kind of different regions geographically when it comes to homelessness. So, Ashley, I know of your story that you started out in L.A. and now you're in Indiana, in Jeffersonville, which is rural, but it also, you know, has a close proximity to a major city.
And well, just, actually, it, not LA. I'm actually from San Jose, California.
Okay, I'm sorry, California. It's all LA to me. No, I'm just kidding. It's not. But coming from California, even San Jose, which is a fairly large city, it's an urban setting, if you will, and then doing some rural. And Pastor Bush, I know you've had the same experience of being in the DC area, but you've also been in Virginia, I believe, and Tennessee in rural environments, what would you say is the biggest difference? And I know part of that you were not in homeless situations, either of you, but what do you see as the biggest differences between resources in the urban setting and resources in the rural setting? Michelle, why don't we go to you now?
I'd have to say that resources are more, I think we have an overabundance of resources in the city. And that being said, sometimes there's duplication. Sometimes there is the ineffectiveness of, you know, being a part of this program, a part of that program, and then it just kind of, you know, scours. But
and you mean the like rural, the five case manager horrible situations that people have to deal with sometimes?
Yes, and none of them are talking to each other, nobody's right. reading each other's notes. But I think that it's important to have maybe a central processing unit, and I've that's been sort of my thing, you know. Even since I came to NCH, I've been saying we need like a comprehensive system. But anyways, the difference between having an overabundance or excess resources in a city as opposed to the rural settings utilize their services well. I see the connecting points. What I didn't share was I was divorced. I moved to Tennessee with my husband at the time, and then was divorced, and as a result had resulted in a homeless situation because it was abusive also. So, but what I found to be the difference in the services there, and it's interesting, I had that experience, Donald, for this talk, and who knows how it will impact us, you know, going forward. They connected their services well, which resulted in me and my children being placed in a safe, affordable housing in wherever I chose to be, which I didn't have to choose a area that was plagued by gun violence and things of that nature. I had a choice in actually where I was able to stay. So I find the differences to be that some of the services and it wasn't as rural Tennessee, but it was less than DC city. So that they utilized their services well, or they went hand in hand. So that was my experience. Even when I moved to lower Tennessee, which was close in Rutherford County, which was a little off the beaten path a little bit, even still, they had great connecting points. You know, you knew where the school districts were. You knew how to, if you had issues and you needed emergency assistance, you could go to this one place that connected you to everybody else. So, there are differences in the city. I think it's just something should be done about it. But that's I'm on my soapbox when I talk about that.
Well, this is actually a place where a soapbox is a highly attractive part of what we do. So we want you to be on your soapbox. This is actually a soapbox setting. So thank you for that. Ashley, what about you? What do you see as those differences between the setting that you're in now and kind of the urban setting? What do you see as the differences there?
So I'll explain the differences, but during my time, you know, experiencing homelessness as a teenager, I didn't even know about the resources. It was such a big city and there's so many people that like, I just kind of fell through the cracks, honestly. The welfare office they knew who I was, didn't offer me any programs or services, didn't let me know that there were any services available. When I went into the foster system, nobody offered me any programs or services. I had no idea about them. I had no idea, and I just kind of felt all alone. And nor did I think I could qualify for any of the programs because I was underage, especially when it comes to homelessness, because then they just throw you in the foster system. But compared to here, or compared to, you know, me working with homelessness now, and I think in from the city to an urban area, kind of where I am now, or rural area, I'm sorry. The biggest difference I see is that there aren't as many resources, but I feel like working in here particularly my situation in the rural area, it's kind of clicky when it comes to providers in different areas, and they don't want to collaborate with each other, which is something I don't understand sometimes.
And that's in a rural community?
Yes, in a rural community, because everyone knows each other, right? And in small communities, they have to fight for dollars. And it's kind of gets not so nice or polite. I think that we missed the entire point of it all, that we're all trying to help the same people. But even I think now the lack of access to knowledge of these resources, like we posted on Facebook, and that's much more available than when I was a teenager. You know, we didn't have Facebook when I was a teenager. We had my page though. MySpace. Yeah, I forgot.
It was always me.
But yeah, I think that the access to the information of the programs that are available within your area is definitely something that I'm seeing both in rural areas and big cities. And people do find us, but I feel like they have to be referred, you know, or like they have to somehow be into the system for us to get acknowledgement that they're there. If not, then they just kind of don't know that we're even here. And I feel like that's a big issue that probably should be addressed.
Thank you very much. Those are really, really insightful kind of gaps in the system that you both talked about. I know there's a couple of programs around the country where young people can go independently to a shelter setting. Cincinnati has a wonderful program called The Lighthouse, where kids under 18, one, there is a day shelter, and then there's also an emergency shelter where they can go and they don't have to notify their parents, which, you know, there's some laws around that. But the issue is many times parents are the issue. And so letting an abusive parent know where you are really exacerbates that issue in a whole other kind of way. So one of the partners that's come along in kind of the homeless service delivery system is the domestic violence community. So I asked you about foster care, didn't ask you about domestic violence. Are there things that could be changed? Was that system helpful in finding housing? You both talked about that a little bit. Tell me about that relationship with the homeless system. And I know it's gotten better. You guys were in the system a while back, but was it adequate? Was there any kind of connectivity there? What would you say about that particular system and its relationship to homelessness?
Donald, in my case, the systems worked for me. My domestic violence situation escalated the urgency for them to get us placed.
Your resolve.
Yeah, ours was resolved. To speak on the perspective, I a person in my family is really close to us. She went through a domestic violence situation here, and it was terrible, and the systems didn't work for her at all. They waited, in fact, until there was an incident, which I thought was not the right way to go about that, because in this instance, it could have resulted in her death before something would be done. And like Ashley shared on that perspective, that because it's a big city, this was one of those issues that where the people fell through the cracks, and we have an abundance of resources here that should have never happened. I'd like to see, I would say, a revamping of that particular system, because I think that if you respond to the problem after it has happened, but all of the signs are there, then it's ineffective. Why are you in place if you're really not doing what you were put in place to do. Some of those families are not protected. Women find themselves back in abusive situations because there's no credibility around the story, or the only person who understands it is the person going through it. And when they have tried to explain it to the powers that be, so to speak, or to the police department or whatever, everybody's react. They're reactive to after the fact.
So react. So there's proactive. More react. There's more reaction than prevention or proactivity. Correct. Proactiveness to it. Definitely understand. Definitely. Thank you for that perspective. That is pretty powerful. Ashley, any thoughts on that?
I would say I did not receive any kind of assistance when it came to my domestic violence, unfortunately, because I was a minor, I did not qualify.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. I wanted to get you guys to react to something. Wanted to share. This is the Bring America Home Now campaign. So this is something NTH has launched. What we want to do is uplift people that are experiencing homelessness to be at the forefront of a grassroots movement to end homelessness together. And won't go into it in the interest of time, but these are the things that we think are, from a structural standpoint, the most important issues to deal with. Housing, health, livable incomes, education, training, civil rights, and anti-racism. Are we on the right track? Are we on the right track having homeless people lead it? And are these the things that are the most important when it comes to structural change? So remember, housing, health, livable incomes, education, civil rights, and anti-racism.
Yes, I think it's great to have persons with lived experience lead the way with those issues. I was going to add to it, I would say if it's not already there, mental health.
When we talk about health, we talk about behavioral health, both mental health and substance abuse.
Okay.
So thank you for pointing that out. That's something that's really, really important. Ashley, do you think those are the right things to be talking about?
Yes, I do, actually. I think those are all great and important points that need to be made, but there's so many details within each one that we need to make sure that we cover. And we already know that housing is hard to, it's not a right as of right now, but even having access to housing as a teenager, and you're homeless, there is no housing options. Nobody's going to lease to you. Nobody's going to rent to you. You're pretty
much. And it's hard to get a job too, you say.
And right? You can't get a job. Yeah. Cause, I didn't have a worker's permit and I didn't have my parents' signature. So I really couldn't, I was kind of stuck.
When I was young, there were these summer job programs. I know that was in D.C. as well, Pastor Bush. But those have disappeared. And so you kind of have to fend for yourself. But there's no fending if there's no jobs available. I'm going to steal a little bit of our time today. Thank you for your comments. I'm going to steal just a couple of minutes here. I want to invite people to Bring America Home Now campaign. We're actually launching a comedy tour to help support our work. That guy that you see on your screen right now, that's John Leguizamo, really, really famous face. He's going to be our headliner on November the 17th. I'd love for everyone that's listening to attend, but I also love for you to attend as well. And the other reason, I'm actually the best comedian in America. I'll do a little bit of time myself. Just kidding. I will do some time, but I'm not the best comedian in America. But I wanted to make sure people who are watching, listening to the podcast, I hope you'll join us on November the 17th. And for you too, I hope that you both will join us on our campaign because it's so important that people who have lived experience are leading it. You just heard yourselves talk about what is needed to make change. And I haven't heard any more effective advocate than the two of you today in talking about the experience, talking about what we need to do to change. And we need to highlight your voices. So we need you as partners on our campaign. I know, Ashley, you really helped us out in some focus groups, which you are amazing. So I know that you have some tremendous skills, and I hope you'll join the National Coalition for the Homeless and help us make change. And Pastor Bush, I've already recruited you. You are already there. Thank you for the work you're doing. Pastor Bush is working on doing some grant work for us, making sure that people with lived experience get to share their experience with HUD. So she didn't talk about that. I'm a little upset about her not talking about the rest of the work that she's doing, but that's okay. We understand. We appreciate everything that you're doing. Thank you so much for all you've done over the years, the people that have come from your flock, and how you so effectively use your faith. Ashley, thank you so much for the case management. Being able to provide that empathy in case management is incredibly important. A lot of people do this work for a paycheck. Some of us do it because we really want to make change and we really care about people. So I want to thank you from, you know, just the bottom of my heart for your willingness to be here today and your willingness to share some traumatic experiences, but really, you know, help people understand that your situation does not have to be your destiny, that you, me, all of us are capable of some amazing things. And we just need a Barbara Anderson or someone else to be there to help us guide ourselves through that trauma to the next phase. And we want to thank all of you for joining us on Voices of Homelessness podcast. We want to thank our producer, the dynamic Kalita, who is just an amazing advocate and also just doing some wonderful things. I hope you'll join her next broadcast of her documentary. She has an amazing documentary that's out there. Please take a chance to get a look at it. Kalita, I don't know if you want to put in the chat when the next time you'll have the opportunity to share your documentary. Kalita Harris, I should say as well. If you want to let us know when that next screening is, the documentary is called the No Address Documentary. I do recommend it. I've seen it about 17 times myself. In December of 2021, the documentary will be featured in Atlanta, Georgia. So please make sure you get out to see that, people down there in Atlanta. I have a lot of family there, so I'm going to mandate you. You have to go see it. It's mandatory for you to do that. But again, we want to thank you all. This is the Voices of Homelessness podcast. And as you see, there are some amazing stories of resilience, of courage, and compassion that we have within the homeless population. People experiencing homelessness are not the stereotypes you see.